This episode is one of my favorites. I had the most fun conversation with Shelley Lear, and she does something that no other guest has done that I've talked to. So she has a very unique niche. That's what it's called in the business world, niche. But she is, you remember the show Home Improvement with Tim Allen? Tool Tim or something was his name. Well, she's kind of like that. She is the female version of Tim Allen, but she is on Instagram, if you want to look her up, as Homeroom Shop. And, you know, if you're my age, remember the days where, and she talks about this, is like all the boys in middle school, they got to make things. They got to go to it wasn't called homeroom because homeroom was something different, but they got to go and make things and we went to home economics, which, you know, I would have rather been in the other room with the boys making things. That's just, it was my personality. So I really connected with her because I'm kind of like somebody who likes to make things, but I haven't taken the time to do that for a long time. I don't put in the time and effort when it gives you such pleasure and it gives you such rewards when you make something with your own hands. And then it's just like, I did that. And that's what she does. She helps people do DIY projects. She comes from an upholstery background. So it started out where she was an upholsterer and then she helped people do their own upholstery. And now she has in-person workshops and she has online as well, where she helps people, but she's a delight to talk to. And she's older than me and she looks great. And she's so, I think, you know, just loving what you do, being passionate about what you're working on and contributing to the world in a positive and healthy way is just like, that's keeps you young, keeps you vital, keeps you happy. She just was a delight. And so let's get to the interview now so you can meet Shelley.
Hi, I'm Laurie Wright, also known as Not Your Average Grandma. I created this podcast as a place to go for midlife inspiration. If you are in a stage where you believe the best is behind you, it is my hope that one of these episodes will ignite a long suppressed or unrealized desire, and you will see the potential within yourself just waiting to be tapped so you can do amazing things with the time you have left. I want you to stop seeing your age as a limitation and start seeing it as your superpower. You have years of experience and value that a younger you never had, so it's time to lean into that and use it to fuel your future. No more letting age hold you back from the pursuit of a more passion-filled life. The more passionate we are, the better the world will be. So stop settling for average, put your AirPods in, and let this episode inspire you to take the first step in transforming your mind, body, and soul.
Welcome to another episode of Not Your Average Lives. And today I have with me Shelley Lear. And Shelley, I am very excited to have her on. And she is, and I say, I'm always excited about my guests because I love my guests, but she has a niche that is so different than anybody I've talked to in my year and a half of doing this podcast. And she teaches women how to use power tools. And that excites me because I have a DIY person inside of me that is suppressed right now. And I used to be a tomboy. I don't know if that comes from my tomboyishness. We have to talk about that, Shelley, to see if like, cause we were doing some conversing before I hit record. And it sounds like anyone can use power tools. So I just want to welcome you to the show. I'm so excited for you to be here.
Thank you, Lori. I'm so excited to be on. Thank you so much.
So she's going to talk about this, and I'm sure we're going to get into a lot of stuff because she's got a very powerful backstory, and she's going to share her age and the points at which she had, you know, kind of these Mack truck, as I call them, moments where something that happened in her life changed the trajectory. And I love that she's, you know, she's continuing to evolve as a person, even at her age. And so, where do you want to start? Why don't we just start by you sharing what you do right now? Okay. And I'd love to know your, like, your skill set, because you know what you studied, because I think what you studied and what you do now, it's kind of interesting how, because you were a legal aide or something too, right?
I was a paralegal. Well, yeah. So in college, I majored in design and textiles, and I did a 180 and went to paralegal school in Philadelphia. So I came back to Indianapolis and worked for a huge law firm in their litigation section until I got married and started having kids. And then I stayed home. And so that was sort of the impetus for me to start a business. And I had always been, I don't know if the word crafty is the right word to use, but I'd always been okay working with my hands and making things. So I had a neighbor who was starting an upholstery business in her garage. And her line was, I have expensive taste. My husband doesn't agree with that. So I need to work and make enough money. I can go buy what I want to buy. So I would go over when my kids were in bed and help her tear furniture down. And we had such a good time. So this is a roundabout way of telling you about my what I studied. So
Betty, we go there, like, what made you do the paralegal? Was it more money driven? Because, like, to me, the universe, like, gave you this gift of this neighbor, because that's really seems to me like to be what your first love was.
Well, that's good. So my brother is an attorney, and he was telling me I should go to law school. And I was saying, I just don't think that's the thing to do. And at the time, a paralegal was a new paraprofession. So they were pushing it. I mean, there were people coming around trying to recruit. So I found out about a school in Philadelphia, and I just took off and did that. And actually, the reason why was I was doing my student teaching, and I did not like it. And
yes, I did that too. I was going to be a teacher, and I didn't like this. It's like, not for me. It's funny. I teach adults now, and so do you. But yeah, it's a different, you know, it's just like, I think we were meant to be teachers, but just not of, it was not the age
junior,
group.
Not junior high and high school.
Right. Seventh grade English. That was not fun.
Yeah. So that's how I ended up from being a paralegal and then getting validated, really, my creative nature.
Yes.
So,
love that.
I'm 65. I just turned 65. And
she looks amazing. If you go to YouTube and watch this video, she looks amazing.
Oh goodness.
Thank yes.
You. No, that's because I'm
yeah. And she's single. She's single.
Oh yeah.
Although I think most of my listeners are women, so
that's true, but they might have a brother. Okay. I started a little custom upholstery business so I could stay at home with my three kids. That's how I got launched.
Yeah. And I will have you know, I have recovered my dining room chairs.
Oh, good.
Such an easy little project. All you need is a staple gun and some fabric. Yeah.
And some technique and some special technique.
Okay. But that's an easy first, like starter project, right? Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. It really is.
And it makes you feel so good. So I think for you as a teacher teaching this, you probably, like, when somebody does something that they've never done before, they probably, it gives them just this new sense of confidence.
You have no idea. Not only do they have a great boost, but when I sit back and watch what they've done, I'm thrilled. I'm more thrilled now than when I was covering stuff. I'm like, can you believe you did that? And they walk out and they're just thrilled. So that's kind of why I do what I do. I like to see, you know, it's a transformation in a short period of time, and they see how they can do something they didn't think they could do. And I'm not kidding you. It is just, it's fabulous.
Yeah. And I saw a photo, I think it was on Instagram, because you go by Homeroom on Instagram.
Homeroom Shop. Yeah.
Homeroom Shop. Yeah. And you are, like, building something, like, so, you know, you don't just do upholstery of, like, just cover stuff, like, you build stuff and then cover it. Right.
Well, right. So I used to, for so many years, you know, in upholstery, you have to spend a lot of time learning the skill. And So, okay, I did all that. And then I started teaching it. And then it was like, now I want to start building and showing people how to build benches or ottomans and then take them to the next step.
Sign me up.
Yeah.
You know, because one of the things that I said to Shelly when we were before we recorded is, you know, there's a form of meditation to projects. Like I was just reading in my abundance book about she likes to garden and she likes there's a meditative, you know, you get into a meditative state when you're out gardening and you're in nature. But I found like the times that I was doing like home projects, like sewing projects or like recovering, you know, you're like really with yourself and your thought. And being such a busy person, I never stopped. Like I was always working on the next thing on my to-do list. And that really makes you kind of stop. And it's not just the project that you finish, but it's the time you spent and invested and really thinking about things that you didn't think about when you're so busy, you're suppressing all those things.
No, so, you're absolutely right. And so what is that? It's called flow. You get in that flow of,
yes,
you kind of lose track of time.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's supposed to be the most satisfying human time that you can spend is in flow.
So do you help people like come up with ideas for projects or do you have like, okay, we're going to do this thing together and, you know, everybody's going to do their own version of it?
It works out both ways. So I have a boot camp, which is a 3-day class, and I have parameters on what kind of chair they can bring in. So I have to know that I can move everybody along at the same rate, pretty much. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There have been times when I kind of have free studio time and they can bring in something specific, but I don't have so many students, so I can work on them a little bit one-on-one. And then on other classes, like if they do, I have this thing called a spool ottoman class. I already have the frames built and the steps. You know, in a class situation, you've got to kind of have it set. And I actually think students like it to be set. And if they want to do something very individual, I'm open for them to contact me and I'll work with them one-on-one or two-on-one.
Yeah. And everybody needs an ottoman. Ottomans are great at the foot of the bed for a dog to jump up on. They're also like used as coffee tables. They're used as coffee tables and just put a tray on them. So good. So I'm trying to talk Shelly into, I think she's going online. I'm not sure how much she's online yet. She does a lot of in-person stuff, but you're on.
I started online courses in 2013.
I made them
before there was any platform. I just patched it together and I'm still selling some of those classes.
Oh, okay. Well, definitely. Yeah. We'll put the links in the show notes, but yeah, I thought you were mostly like offline, but you're online too. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Cause I think there, you know, so many people that follow me would be interested in doing a DIY project. So cool. So cool.
I don't know. You know what? I feel like I'm like out here sort of waving this banner, but that feeling you get when you've done it yourself is just, I mean, it just boosts you for the whole day.
Yeah. Are you on YouTube too?
I have a few things on YouTube and that's something on my to-do list to post more videos up there.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So yeah, let's go back. Cause I really like everybody's stories about how they got to where they are because, you know, you didn't start where you are now. So tell me, and she told me, cause I have people fill out a form and I ask what kind of transformation they've had. Cause I, you know, that's what I speak to. Cause I think that's the most inspiring to see. I want whoever's listening to be able to see themselves and the potential in themselves through my guests. And so you just had some heartbreaking stories and you said you had two, one was at 40 and the other. So can you walk through those and just,
I will. And I don't want it to sound like I'm like poor me or anything because you know, I have gotten through it, but when I was 40, my beloved nephew was 26 and he was killed in a very fluke accident. He was playing basketball in a YMCA and a lady on the road outside had some sort of a little seizure and she went off the road and he had just sat down to take a break at the lunch or over the lunch hour he was playing. And she plowed through the back door and he was killed. Oh. And that turned my world inside out. And I had three kids at the time and was married at the time. And I did some really deep soul searching. I mean, I was in agony. And
Were your kids about his age too?
No. Oh, okay. My kids were sort of the younger set. Mm-hmm. Like my daughter was in junior high at that time and he was 26 at the time.
Okay.
So my brother is 10 years older than I am. So these were his kids, a little bit older.
Did it make you think, like when I hear a story like that and I think that he couldn't have done anything different. I mean, it's not like, you know, he couldn't have done anything different. It's like, why does that happen? Like, is that supposed to, there's a reason in the larger universe, you think, but it's like, oh, such a loss.
Well, I think I had to just dig so deep in the way I came to terms with it was, you know, I don't know that there was a reason that it happened. It just happened. But now what can we do to turn it into something better or something beneficial? And so after that, that really turned me around because I presented this to my brother. Let's do a 3-on-3 basketball charity basketball tournament. And it turned out that we did that for 4 or 5 years and it was huge. And the money we made went to the YMCA after school projects for kids who couldn't afford after school sports. So for my brother, now I feel like I was a little codependent in here. Like, I was in agony, but I couldn't stand to see my brother in such agony. And so I was doing everything I could. And, you know, whether that mattered or not, I don't know. But having that tournament for him to focus on, and his wife, she was in there too, helping out, it did lift our family up and out of that pit, you know, and it was a pit of despair.
Yeah. And you did is you, in a way, paid it forward, because think of the people, the children that got the YMCA and got, you know, met a mentor or something happened through that experience that changed their life.
Right.
You know? And so if you look at it that way, you know, it's easier to digest, you know, but it's still hard. Yeah.
It is. And nothing takes away that, like that little dull pain in there, but you're right. When you can look at some of the good stuff, it does lift you up little by little. Mm-hmm. And I know it was a good thing that we did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
yeah,
that was that. Okay. So that was at 40.
Yeah.
So
you do some soul searching about like, how long do I have to live? You know, sometimes when somebody dies that you like, oh, what am I doing with my time? Did you go through that?
So I don't know that I specifically thought that, but what I thought was everybody can die like that. You know, I mean, I was like in this despair, like it could be anything. And, you know, I got a little hyper protective of my own kids.
Yes.
And I just thought it's just a toss up. And that's not a good way to live. So anyway, I really wrestled with that for, I don't know, maybe 2 years. I really came out of that. And I thought, you know, serving, like that whole basketball tournament thing gave me such a sense of satisfaction and joy. So then I thought, okay, I'm going to lead a life to serve others or to help others. And so that kind of changed my core beliefs about how important that was.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet. And, you know, it's a little stepping stone.
It was.
Yeah.
It really was. And you know what else? I will tell you, my own kids saw that and participated. And they, as adults now, have a strong belief in that same thing. And so at the time, I didn't know what I was doing, but I kind of was just going through the motions, and at least they saw that.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we don't realize how much we model,
you know,
we always think, oh, like when we think modeling of, oh, you know, when I am behaving well, and I'm doing the right things. But when you're going through a grief process like that, they're watching. And so the fact that you pulled yourself out and did that, I'm sure that made a huge impact on them.
Well, anyway, I think it did, but you know, you never know. I don't know that they would pinpoint that. Maybe when, maybe at my funeral, they'll say that, like, oh, my mom did this, but so anyway, that was like, that was the 40s and it's been a rocky ride since. But actually my business, so I had my business at the time, and that was, that's a good segue talking about that, because as I changed, I turned to my ability to make things and create things. And at the time I was creating for other people. And that was kind of like, actually, it was kind of like a meditation we were talking about. It was a solitude I needed to get reflective. And also, you know, as women get older, you, a lot of them say I needed more time by myself. I mean, I really did change. I became the introvert I really am in my heart. And I needed that time. And I saw how that was my go-to thing, because I don't drink and I don't smoke and I don't chase boys and I don't, you know, I don't have any other crutches except exercise and sugar and making stuff.
So you're talking about, so was your, when you said you had this business, your husband, you know, was also working, I'm sure. So was this business like a serious business, or is it more like a hobby fun business?
No, it was, it never was a hobby. I knew when I started it, I mean, right away, I hit the ground running, because it, if anybody's ever looking for an upholsterer, you know how hard it is to find them. And even though I started out kind of, you know, as a one woman show, which I still am, I had people, and I was operating as a business from the get-go. And so it was a small, very small business, but I lived up in the suburbs, and all the parents and teachers of my kids' friends and all, they just, you know, it was like, this worked. It worked for a long time.
Yeah. Good. Okay. And so then your second transformation happened when? And there was like, there was actually kind of a double, the second one was kind of two things, right?
I got a lot of things.
Or multiple things.
I got a lot of things.
Yeah, yeah.
So starting in 2009, at the end of 2009, my brother, who was 3 years older than me, died of liver cancer. And we knew that he had hepatitis, I don't know what he had, but we had heard that he was in the clear, but he wasn't. And so he died. It wasn't suddenly, but it was, it didn't drag out over a lot of years. But that was right after Christmas in 2009. And so that kind of took us down again. And he didn't.
So was he diagnosed and died like within a year? Because I know that sometimes.
It was, because I mean, he was not really healthy, but he thought he was going to be okay. And we thought he was going to be okay. And then he just took a bad turn. And that was it. And it was fairly short. It's probably like less than 6 months. So anyway, so he died. And
so you said he was like 50, you were 52 or he was,
50? I was 50 and he was 53.
Wow.
I
was just actually on Facebook last night. It just made me think of this. And I saw a friend I worked with. We actually were also neighbors, and she posted RIP somebody that,
I hate that.
I also worked with. And I was like shocked. I like went to her Facebook page. She has kids that she died in May, and her son, who's the older of the two, just graduated from high school in June. And oh my gosh, I was like so heartbroken. And I was like, I did the math. I mean, she's like 53. She's that made me think of her because she's 9 years younger than me. And I was like, oh my gosh. It means like, oh, you know? Yeah.
It's well, I have a lot to say about going through multiple losses.
Yeah. But it's like, so when we were younger, we thought, oh, 53, that's a full life. No, I mean, like, we're just getting started.
Oh, it's so young. You're just getting started after you raise your kids.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that was, that was another, you know, time to stop and you know, figure things out again. And I don't know, I got to tell you, I didn't have all that long to grieve, because then in 2011, my brother Mark, who was, he was 63 at the time, he had a heart attack and died suddenly, boom, on my son's birthday. And that threw me again for a loop, because so I had three older brothers and an older sister. And Mark was always the brother that took me places and took, you know, he kind of made sure I was okay. I was the youngest. And I was gutted again.
So, and that sounds like that was just sudden, out of the blue, sudden, nowhere. Yeah.
Sudden.
Yeah.
So Lori, the thing is, and I would say to any of listeners, I've had more sudden deaths in my family. My dad died when I was 14, heart attack. And then my nephew killed suddenly. Matt died with cancer. Mark suddenly, more to come. And I never got to say goodbye to any of them, really, because Matt was in a coma when I got to visit him. So I never really got to say goodbye. And that was something I could have agonized about. But I really just decided I couldn't take that on with everything else. With the grief, I just couldn't. I couldn't worry about that. It wasn't going to change anything. And I don't know if I could. Actually, I don't even know if I could have handled saying goodbye to anybody.
Yeah.
I'm so sensitive. I would probably have just fallen apart.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
It's tough. And then you said that's not all. So is there somebody else?
Okay. So Mark, that was my brother, Mark, and he had two boys and a wife, and, you know, we're still really close with her. And then, okay, wait. So then 2011, it was like one thing after the other. That was in May. And then in October, my mom died, and she was 92 and lived a great life. And the great thing about that was the day before she died, she got a new pair of shoes. So she was out shopping, and so that was a good way to go.
Oh, she like dropped dead shopping?
No, she's full of a night. She gotten to go out the day before in a pair of shoes.
Got it. Okay. So she had her new pair of shoes. She just couldn't. Yeah. She had her new pairs of shoes. She couldn't enjoy wearing them wore them.
She couldn't enjoy wearing them. But the thing is, it was like she wasn't dragging out sick, or, you know, she did have a little dementia, but it wasn't bad.
Yeah.
So that, okay.
Well, that's great that like a 92-year-old's out buying shoes. Like I only hope that I still like, I'm caring about how I look and what
I do. I know.
Still buying some Spanx when I'm 92. Yeah.
Spanx are like the new girdle, right?
Well, you know, Spanx started out as girdles, but I have so many Spanx jeans, and I have so many Spanx leggings. I just love them so much. Yeah.
Well, they're good for you too, to compress all that stuff.
Yeah. I just got two new pair. So
I saw that on
sale. It's like, they send me email all the time, and I'm like, delete, delete, delete. But this one said sale. And so I had to go look, and I recently bought a pair that I like that have pockets. Cause when I walk my dog, I like to stick my phone in my pocket. And I was like, it was a different color.
Oh, nice.
And it was on sale, and I'm like, sold. So,
you know, the old saying, I can't afford not to buy them.
That's right. That's right. My husband, like try to hide it so he doesn't see the package when it comes.
Yeah, I remember that.
Do you really need another pair of Spanx? It's like, no, but it makes me happy. So that's what it is. All right. So, and then another major.
So then my mom died, and we did not have a service until, that was in October. So then at Thanksgiving, everybody came together and we had a nice little service. And, you know, at that point I'm kind of operating it was kind of like on autopilot, like just, I hadn't really processed a lot of this stuff. So it, you know, it's boom, boom, boom. And you can't make yourself process faster than you can process. And so,
yeah. And you're probably like thinking, when's the next shoe going to drop? Right.
If anything on this whole podcast, I lived in hypervigilance for like 8 years, 9 years, and it is not a good place to be at all.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my daughter almost died from, she had double pulmonary embolisms, the emboli. Yeah. And I ended up getting, and that was just one like crisis and not all the ones you had. And I started getting anxiety attacks. I think it was a combination of not being happy and where I was and like, just what if. I kept reliving it in my head. Like, what if she had died? What if I hadn't been there? What if this, what if that, you know? So
the anxiety just was off the charts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I didn't really know it. I didn't know that that's what I was feeling, but like, you know, you feel it in your body, and I was feeling it like in my throat, like constricted. I mean, and I look like a wreck. I look back on some of those photos and I was just gimping through, really. Mm. But again, throughout all of that, I was still going back to to creativity, which is what my crutch has been. And so let's see, what is that? That's at the end of 2011. Then I get a reprieve for a couple years. Thank goodness. And then in December of 2014, my sister, who was the oldest in the family, got a call. She lived in Minnesota. We got a call that she had gone into the hospital after a knee replacement, but she had had some other situation years before that, that sort of with the knee replacement and blood thinner kind of didn't work so well. And she died in her sleep. And so that was 2014, the end of the year. And then the icing on the cake was January 2015. I discovered, this gets juicy now, I discovered an email from some woman my husband worked with. And you can guess that was it. And
now, did she email you? Or
no,
you just
was,
found
no,
it?
I found it. I don't know. You know, maybe he wanted me to find it. But I found this email from her to him, and it was so graphic. And I was stunned. Although I will say that throughout most of my marriage, he was very, very flirtatious. And I always kind of wondered, but I just never, ever thought that was something he would do. But looking back on it from where I am now, this was ongoing for, you know, this is not an isolated incident.
So he had multiple affairs is what you uncovered.
But he never copped to those. But when I look back on situations, and I think he kind of was telling me what was going on and I didn't really get it. You know, I had three little kids. I thought, okay, there's a whole bunch to go along with that. It was it took me down.
Yeah.
And so he was very remorseful and wanted to reconcile. So he said, and we went to therapy for a year and a half. And I realized that was something, he had other things he needed to deal with. And because of one incident in the therapist's office, and I said, all right, you need to go deal with some issues. And then we'll go to marriage therapy after that. But he stopped going. And I knew that this was not going to work. And I wish the therapist would have told me that. I wish she would have been honest and said, you guys are never going to make it. But then.
But I think you need to figure that out on your own. You know,
I agree. Yeah, no, I agree. But I have heard of other people whose therapists say to them, you guys are not on a, you know, this is not looking like it's going to work.
Yeah. Yeah. Or asking the right questions that would lead you there sooner.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. The right questions. Right?
Yes. Yeah. I went to marriage therapy, you know, a couple of times in my marriage that ended up ending after 25 years. But I remember on the second round that we went on, I really respected the therapist because on the first day he said, you know, this is not something that I want to continue. So, you know, it's going to have a, you know, resolution. So, you know, we'll get to the bottom of it. In other words, I'm not just going to take your money and have you keep coming back. You know, he was solution oriented. He wasn't.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I felt like by the time we found someone that my husband agreed to go to, which was a woman, wink, wink,
And now he's married to her?
No, he's not. But, you know, by the time we got to her, he's like, oh, yeah, I like her a lot. She gets me. And what now that I look at that, it's like, yeah, he was able to, you know, he was able to get her to believe his story. But anyway, yes.
Oh,
there was something else about that. Oh, so what happened was, we went on 3 years, and I knew in my heart, it was one of those intuitive things. It's like, I know this is not going to work. We have to get out of this. And I didn't know how to do it. I mean, you know, he said he was trying, but then, so that Christmas, that 2017, we had been out with our two sons playing in the snow, having so much fun, and came in, and out of the clear blue, you talk about a message coming to you out of the clear blue. I said, hey, let me see your phone. And he went berserk, and he went nuts. And so that was sort of the end of it. And, you know, I realized that it was done. So I said, I mean, it was like this, like, whew, and I said, I'm done. And I even like was a little bit relieved. I said, I'm done. I felt bad. My two sons were upstairs. I mean, they lived on their own. They were headed out the next day, but I said, I am not going to live this lie anymore, because he had been messing around. I don't know how he was messing around. I was done with it.
Yeah. There's clearly a long-term pattern there that would be likely hard to break. Yeah. We just finished watching the first season of Dirty John. Have you ever seen that?
Oh, I don't know if I've seen that.
So I didn't know anything about it. I'd heard people say it was good. Well, apparently it's like every season's a different story. So it's kind of like Fargo, the series Fargo. And so I messaged my kids and they were like, oh yeah, that's a real, it's based on a true story. It's based on a true story. Now, I don't think your ex is as bad as John, but this guy, oh my gosh. It's like, yeah.
Well, you know what? And then you become so, and I'm not the first person to do this. Then you read everything you can read to figure out what is with somebody who does that. And where I am now is I'm at the end of that. Trying to figure it out, which I spent way too long trying to figure it out. And it's okay, I'm with that. Why am I letting him consume my time? Yeah, I'm the one that wanted the divorce, but you still, it's like being a person that could never do that to someone else. It was like, I couldn't stop searching for the answers. And that is something, you know, I had to look at like, why am I doing that?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure you said before we hit record, we were talking about this, and you said that you'd be fine being alone, you know, the rest of your life. You're just not like you're looking for somebody. And I'm sure that like sticks with you too. It's like, well, what's wrong with my selection? You know, what's wrong with that? Why didn't my intuition tell me this, you know, before?
But you know what? It did. When I look back on it, there were times when I was questioning whether that was a good choice or not. And I pushed ahead. It was kind of willfulness. And I thought I was in love. I mean, I even still say to this day, I really loved him. Mm-hmm. And I think I did. I loved him. He just didn't love himself. That's my thing.
Yeah. Yeah. He kept trying to fill an empty, internal need.
Yeah.
So anyway, you're where you are. What have you learned from this? Like so much in your life what have you learned, and what can you share with the listeners?
Well, you know, I think this is a message that most everybody learns when they've come through. It's like you can get through so much. And I am not I guess I am a strong person. I didn't believe myself to be a strong person. And I didn't believe that I could ride the bumps. I always tell my kids, it's like, how good are your shock absorbers? Because I just didn't believe I could do it. And I did come through, and I am so much of a more aware person than I was in that fog I was living in.
Mm.
I think that one of the big things, this is going to sound a little kooky, but I do not fear death. And it's not like I want to, it's not like I'm ready to go, but I don't have that fear or that grasp on, you know, oh my God, if, you know, this might happen or this might happen. It's just like, just do the best to live it like you can live it. And I'm still not just in the moment. I mean, I'm a worrier and I have anxiety, but I intellectually, I see where I needed to change. And even though, you know, that situation kind of, at least that part of it was on him, I see a lot of things that were difficult about me too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, in terms of, you say you still have, like, you know, you still can be anxious and you can still be this and that, but, you know, it sounds, the big difference to me where you are now, and this happened with me, is that you are now aware. Before, yeah, you're going through life totally oblivious of how you were operating and how you felt and your feelings. And now you're in tune with them and you know how to get out of it. And you have tools, not necessarily power tools, but you have tools. Yeah, you have tools.
You went right in.
Yes.
Went right into that.
Yeah, that's so
it's
great.
Tools. It's and I was going to say that. It's like having those tools. And one of the things, like what you just said, is being aware. It's like I even noticed, even in the past couple of weeks, sometimes when I either jump to a conclusion or whatever, I go, wait a minute, where's that coming from? You know, and I didn't used to do that. I would just be up there in my head wrestling all the time. And now I'm able to step back a little bit. And again, I have a long way to go, but man, have I come a long way too.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, you're going to learn more lessons along the way. And it's great. It's great too, because you're a teacher. And so, and that's how I feel as a teacher, is that everything that I learn, I think I love learning even more, because I know that everything I learn is something that I can regurgitate back. And, yeah, and, you know, we do it in different ways. And I love the way you use your whole business of building. I have a question on, well, first of all, this is a crazy question, but what's your favorite tool?
Oh, let's see. Well, you know what? I think my favorite tool is a jigsaw.
Ooh.
You can get a lot done with a jigsaw. And
what even is that? I think a jigsaw puzzle, but
it's like a handheld scroll saw. So it just has a needle, and it, you know, rotate it back and forth, and you can cut curves.
But oh,
you can also,
you have to draw, like I'm thinking of a piece of, yeah, plywood, and you would, yeah, draw a, yeah, line of some sort or however you wanted it. And then you follow it with, ooh,
right. And it's, yeah, so it's not easy, but there are different blades that go on there that cut through different kinds of wood. But what I like about it is if you're afraid to use, and a lot of women are afraid to use a circular saw, you know, that is,
oh yeah,
scary, and a chop saw, but a jigsaw, you can, if you attach a jig or a
shield kind of thing.
Well, you attach a board so you have a straight line to go down next to.
Oh, got it.
You can cut you can cut straight lines with a jigsaw, but you can also cut out curves,
yeah,
with a jigsaw.
Yeah.
So in
I think of a circular saw as like, I don't know. Maybe I've seen too many horror movies, but it's like, you know, I could hurt myself with that. Whereas with the other one, you could still hurt yourself, but it's like, it's much more innocent looking. It's not.
Well, I agree.
Scary.
And so with my power tool class, I don't want to run that in person because the liability would be too much. And so, I'm all about safety, but that's going to be an online course and we start out with four tools. And then I teach everything about them. And then we make a bench at the end. And then that'll lead into another possible class. But I have a lot of women who have messaged me who say, I'm ready to go. I've got my husband's tools. And one of the things is, and I don't know if you feel like this, but sometimes men like to tell you how to use the tools. And I almost say I want to do this for women, single women, but I don't want to really niche it down that much. But if you can do it by yourself on your terms and for a woman, it's just completely different than, mm-hmm, how men do it. I think.
Yeah. Yeah. You probably need a lesson in your course that says how to talk to your husband about,
yeah,
staying out of your space when you're doing this.
Wait, what about a chapter called, how to respond to mansplaining or something like that?
That's right. Yes. Yes. Stay out of my space. Don't even look.
Yeah.
When I'm in here, it's an off limits type of thing.
But you know, if it's their tools, they are not going to let you go.
So yeah, that's interesting. That is an interesting element of it. So yeah, I love that.
Okay. So you said you were a tomboy, and that was the way I was. I had three older brothers.
Yeah.
And the big thing was they got to take shop class, and I
Isn't that terrible? We had home economics.
Yes.
And we had to sew a skirt and learn how to like cook something.
Yes.
Which I didn't want to do. Yeah. So you know what I like to do, which is interesting, is I loved putting things together. Yep. So I loved it when I got like a bicycle, like you had to put it together or you got like when honestly in my family, when we would get stuff, I was the one who would put it together. My dad, like the Christmas tree. I remember when we first got our first artificial Christmas tree, I put it together. And I remember we had these, the metal at the end, what had different colors on it. And so we like had to put it in the different holes. They weren't the artificial trees of today. And so every year that was my job, you know, because I was the putter together. And so I think maybe that like I have this brain that I like to construct, but what I fell into is just a busy life. And I just was such a workaholic that I never, whenever we would get something and it had instructions, I was like, oh, I don't have time. Yeah. You know, so I let it all be about time that could have been meditative for me. I probably needed it. So, but like when you talk about like one project I did in this house when we first moved in is there was a balance and I didn't like it. It was navy blue and I wanted a different color. So I went and picked out fabric. That's fun. Just the process of picking out fabric is fun. And I created, and it was a very simple balance because what they had up there was just basically a piece of fabric that was clipped. Yeah. You know, so it was super simple. So I went and found fabric and I went and found, I don't know I think it was tape. I don't even think I sewed it because I don't even have a sewing machine anymore. And I just put together a valance and I love it. I look up there and I'm like, oh my gosh, you would never realize how simple that was and how different the room looks just because of this silly, stupid little valance. So just like little stuff like that is, you know, it's rewarding and it's almost permanent, you know, because it's been there for 8 years.
But it sounds like you have a brain, kind of like I feel like I had that kind of brain. I like putting things, I like taking things apart and seeing how they work and putting them back together and maybe making changes. And so that was never encouraged for me as a girl to do anything like that.
Yeah. But, you had brothers too. I didn't have any brothers. So I think that's interesting.
But I think like you or anybody watching this, there are so many ways you can do stuff that are not like if you looked at that balance, and you're like, I could do that a different way. It's like have at it. I mean, if you can innovate, that is so great. And that gives you that other big boost of satisfaction that you feel inside. And it's not just, oh, it feels so good to make something with your hands. It's an actual physiological, this neuroscientist says, it's a spritz of feel-good hormones that cover your brain. And it lifts you up. And it's actually, for mild depression, making things is one of the therapies.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also find too that like a lot of times the people's expectations are really, really low for women. So it's like when I say I did something and it's like a man's job, I get a lot of satisfaction out of people saying, whoa, you did that? Or, you know, and that's like, you know, it's just like the little balance when people say, and I was like, oh yeah, I made that. You did, you know, and it's
Lori, think about, okay, so I gotta get you on board here. Think about if you made your own, constructed a bench and then you made your own cushion for it and you have that in your house, people come in there and
I know
like,
I made that.
Fabulous. And you're like, I made it.
Yeah. I think it's also something that my husband would enjoy doing. You know, I think something like after he retires, I mean, he loves to golf, but I think it would be something that he would enjoy doing. And I think it's a great thing to do in your spare time. So maybe that's my hobby that I've never had is I need to build stuff.
Well, you know what? I think getting back to, you know, people do create in all different ways. And I think you said you like to cook, right?
No, I don't like to cook.
I don't like to garden.
My husband does work in the yard. I don't like do that. His dream is for me to work in the yard. I did that when my kids were younger. It's not something I really enjoy.
Me neither. I want to be a gardener, but I'm just not. And cooking's okay, but it's not that important to me. I want to make things that are cool and that I can sit back and look at for a long time. Mm-hmm. But I just think that having that kind of that go-to, I don't know. I talk to a lot of women and they say they have a lot of projects that they want to do. Like you said, time has taken a toll on them and they're like, oh, I don't have time. I don't have space. I don't have this. I don't have that. But if you can just take an hour or two out and I don't know what it is about fiddling around with making things and making mistakes and correcting the mistakes. It's like a whole spectrum of solution or, you know, creativity and solutions. And I think humans are born creators. I just think they are.
And problem solvers.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love, because I think sometimes people just don't know where to begin. And I love that you have this because, and I think just like with exercise, having something that you have to show up to and you're part of a thing.
Yeah.
It's accountability. You know, you're going to get it done. Right. So I love that.
You need some handholding sometimes. There's just no doubt about it.
Yeah. So tell me what you're working on now and then we'll wrap up.
Okay. Oh, I'm gonna have to call you back and talk. We can talk all afternoon. So right now I've taken a few upholstery jobs into my shop because I don't have a lot of people coming in person, but I have a 3-day boot camp that's coming up this weekend. And I just want to quickly tell you that. So the beauty of this boot camp, which is what got me going on this whole line of teaching and making, is that I would have 6 women come in, and they were coming from all across the country and some from Canada even, and they would bring a chair, a smallish chair. And so we would tear the chairs down and get to know each other. And so we spent the first part of the day talking, and you would be amazed at how many women are nervous and kind of afraid of being thrown into this new situation. And for a long time, I was even nervous, but then I realized I can make them feel comfortable. And so by Saturday, Friday we tear down, and they go get their fabric. By Saturday, they were chit-chatty. They were sharing their contact information. They always had found something in common. And by the end, I saw such a difference. And it's only 3 days. It's not like a life change, but I saw such a difference in their demeanor. And even sometimes one woman specifically said she had a shake and she was so stressed out at work. And by the third day she goes, my shake is gone, you know? And this isn't, this is not going to probably solve things for good, but if it could, it was showing them that turning away from whatever they were focused on and trying something new and using your brain in a different way was refreshing, and it was helping them.
It was a stepping stone.
It was a stepping stone, and it helped them feel better, whatever they were dealing with.
Yeah.
And so this weekend I have a boot camp coming up, and I'm excited about that. And then other than that,
so this is one where people are coming and bringing something fun. Yep. Oh, I post about it. I'm excited to see.
I will.
Yeah. Yeah.
I will. Okay. So we do that. And then I usually bake some cookies because I have some really good cookie recipes. So we do that. We have afternoon coffee because I studied some upholstery in Wales one summer, and we all stopped at 3:00 and had tea, you know, and it was like so much fun. So I integrated that. But anyway, then I'm working on my power tool class, and it's called Power Tool School for Women. And actually I came up like, I'm getting this plan done because of listening to you and the whole James Wedmore promotion. And I thought I can do this. And
You've got to do it because you have such a gift to give to people. Yes.
You were so inspirational because I thought, I mean, she's out there doing it, doing a podcast. I can do this.
Yes, you can. You can. Yeah. So I can't wait to see what you develop and put out in the world as you go forward and, you know, really put it out there, you know, and stop doing the little dabbling. And the in-person is great, but COVID showed us that, you know, we can do so much or online, and you don't have to do the in-person. And you can still intermingle that, because it sounds like a wonderful thing that you do. I was like, how can I have you come to one of my retreats? I'm going to start doing retreats.
Oh, I totally would do
that. Like, maybe we can't build a chair, but maybe you can build a little, I don't know, something.
Girl, we can build all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. All right. Well, thanks so much for coming on. It was a delight to have this opportunity to talk to you and get to know you better.
I love talking to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Not Your Average Lives podcast. If you haven't yet, make sure to subscribe on iTunes if you have an Apple device. You can find free resources and learn what else I have going on at the moment that might interest you on my website at notyouraveragegrandma.com. You can also find me on Instagram or Facebook at Not Your Average Grandma. If you liked this episode, it would make my heart so happy if you could leave me a 5-star rating. You can also add a review to let me know what you like about this podcast, which will help spread the word about it to others who need a little midlife inspiration. As always, be you, listen to your inner voice, and focus on reigniting that lost spark so you can start living your own Not Your Average life.